the thing that's been exciting today, as we've had both services I shared this morning as well, was seeing Lissy on the keys playing and singing. And I remember when I was 13, I could hardly play the piano, let alone the keys that she was playing the songs in, and let alone sing at the same time as trying to play the piano. So I think it's really exciting to see some of our young leaders, I guess, who are coming through and jumping on and leading in worship, and we see them in different parts. Some are outside now in kids' church helping lead, and I think that's really cool. So I guess we can never get tired of seeing things like that. So that sort of brightened up my day straight away. And today we're following week 3 of Just Walk Across the Room, and we are looking at the power of story. Now, I'm going to attempt to use, I'll have the clicker here. I was saying to Mike this morning, I think that when when you go do study, there should be a unit on how to use PowerPoint whilst preaching, because I always just forget to click the button. I forget that you're meant to click through and follow along. So there's every chance you'll just look at that slide, and my other slides aren't that entertaining. So even if I forget, they look like that. There's just different words on them. But before we get going, I want to tell you a story. Now, this story doesn't have a lot to do with anything. I just think it's a cool story. And it's about a story about a guy named Paul. Now, this guy, Paul, he was brought up in a wealthy family. He grew up with a family that sort of gave him everything he needed. And as he grew up, as he finished school, and as he got out into the world, he sort of thought, you know what, it's time that I live on my own. It's time that I get out on my own and get away from my mum and dad's money and how they can sort of sort out all my problems for me. So Paul has this really great idea. He's just going to cut himself off from his parents, and he's going to live his life on his own. And that's all well and good for Paul initially, but he finds that he falls into that trap of going back to his parents. They've got lots of money, they can solve his problems, so he finds himself going back into the trap of going back to his parents and asking for money. Now, one day, Paul comes across these friends, and they were a bit different to the friends he had growing up, his friends who also had lots of money. They're a bit different to those people, because they are sort of more interested in living life, having a bit of an adventure and trying things out. And Paul's kind of drawn to these people in the same way that they're sort of drawn to Paul, because they're like, what would this guy who's really rich and has everything, why do they want to kind of come and live this like normal life? Why don't he want to just stay with his family and have heaps of money? So Paul kind of becomes part of their gang, their friendship circle. And he's sort of like the runt of the litter to start. You know, they're showing him the way, showing him the traps and how to live. And he's having this great time because he's finding out all these new things that you can do that you don't need heaps of money for, that you can just have an adventure and you can just do these cool things. Now, this is going really, really well, and Paul and his mates are doing some great things together and having a great time. But as life goes, these guys sort of get different jobs and move to different places. And Paul finds himself alone in the same spot he was at initially. All of his friends have gone off to different companies, different places of work, and he finds himself alone. And he has a choice. His choice is, do I go back to my parents and get them to bail me out and you know, I'll live off their money again, or do I keep living this life that I've been enjoying and sort of working through? Does anyone want to know what happened to Paul? Anyone interested? A little bit? Yeah? Well, it's actually not important. The point of that story wasn't to tell you what happened to Paul. The point of that story was to show you that stories are powerful. Now, that story is a soap opera story. That story is the start of the career of a WWF wrestler. Crazy, right? Seems like such a strange, bizarre thing, but we're captivated by story. We want to know what happens in stories like that, where there's climaxes and highs and lows, and we want to know how it ends. If I had told you at the start of that story, I'm going to tell you about a wrestler, you probably would have switched off. But we're captivated by the power of story. That's why we like reading books. That's why we like watching movies. I like redemptive story movies. I don't know if anyone else enjoys movies where there's sort of like a redemptive theme. the main character does something dumb, sort of gets shunned, has an opportunity to fight his way back or her way back. They build it up, and then there's the climax and there's the victory, and they're like, yeah, I did it. I'm a sucker for the redemptive story that involves like a father-son storyline. I don't know why, but I just think they're quite cool, and they make me quite sad, but I really like them. I also like the movie World's Fastest Indian. Like, it's a redemptive story of a guy in a motorbike, but I think that's quite powerful. This idea of story and redemption and those sorts of things, we're all drawn to, right? That's why we go pay money to see movies. That's why we pay $9 for a large frozen Coke while watching the movies, because we love going and seeing these stories play out. And it's no surprise then when we read the Gospels that Jesus shares most of what he has to teach through stories. He doesn't sit down with his disciples and sort of say, here's a passage, now we're going to sort of pull it apart and really understand it. All we see of Jesus sharing in the Gospels is him making a story understandable to the group he's speaking to. So if he's speaking to a bunch of people who understand farming, he tells his stories in a farmer's way of understanding. If he's speaking to fishermen, he's speaking in a way that they can understand that story. Jesus understands this idea that story is important. Now, Luke 15, we read it, and if you want to grab your Bibles out, we're just going to read it again because it's a great story. And an important story for us as we look to see what it means to have a story to tell. So you're going to have Luke 15:11 open. And it says this. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. I've always wondered what wild living looks like in those times. I wonder what wild living sort of entailed. I imagine it looks much the same as what sin looks like today, but just the way it was played out was probably a little bit different, and I find that quite fascinating. Maybe I'm the only one. So he squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him off to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? Here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men." So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arm around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found." So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field, and when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in, so his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when your son of yours, who squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found." It's a pretty powerful story when we think of, I guess, what's going on. And as we look into week 3 of Just Walk Across the Room, we look into this idea of the power of story, and we look into the fact that we all have a story to tell. Whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, you have a story. And what we are speaking of today is a story of your testimony, of what it means to have been saved. Now, when we hear those two stories of the sons, when we hear of the younger son and the older son, we hear two totally different people sharing about what they know. For Christians, we have stories that are similar like those in this passage. For some of us, we might have come from a battle of addiction. We might have come from a dark place and been saved. For others, we might have been that person who just grew up in church, who grew up in a Christian household and always knew the love of Jesus. Regardless of your story, it's important. Regardless of your story, it is important. No one's testimony is better than someone else's. What someone has to say and their journey towards faith isn't better than yours. All of our stories are as important as each other. For me, I struggled to share my testimony because the first testimony I heard was when I was sort of a new Christian, and it was this guy and he sort of shared of the way that God had radically transformed his life. He was sort of a drug addict. He was in jail. There was a lot of violence and those sorts of themes in his story, and he was redeemed from that and he was pulled out of that. And that's a great story. And it's a story that actually encouraged me. But it's also a story that made me feel like my testimony wasn't really worthy of sharing. Because for me, my journey of faith came from hanging out with a teacher on Thursdays for a year at lunchtime, where we spoke about more than just schoolwork and things like that. We actually spoke about life and ethics and morals and what it means to be a good person. And from that, he invited me to State Youth Games. And I went to State Youth Games and found out that Christians aren't all weirdos, and they're not as weird as I might have thought they were. And I was challenged by that, and I couldn't leave it behind. I had to do something with that. So I went to church, and I found out that church wasn't weird, and the Christians at church weren't weird like I had thought they might have been. And I was challenged by that. So I started reading the Bible, and I found out the Bible wasn't weird. The stories in it weren't weird, they were actually quite powerful and seemed to be quite great. And somewhere after that, in the six months that followed, I gave my life to Jesus. Now, for me, it took me a long time to try and compare that story, that testimony, with that of the guy who was dragged out of a drug addiction, jail and violence. Because you put those next to each other, and which one in a young 18, 19-year-old's mind sells better, which one sounds better? And I thought that mine had no comparison. Now, that's certainly not to say anything less of this guy's testimony, because it was massively important. But it is to say that mine's important as well. The story that I've just shared with you is important. And maybe for someone here, they've heard that story and gone, well, that's actually a bit similar to mine, and I always thought mine was pretty lame. Maybe it's not that lame. Maybe it's actually pretty cool to share and tell. For others, maybe your story is one of addiction and battle and struggle, and it's refreshing to hear someone say, you know what, I just had someone who took me to somewhere and invited me to read the Bible, and through that I came to faith. No one's story is more important than someone else's. I wish it didn't take me so long to realize that, and hopefully if you're in that space, you can come to realize that your testimony is of great importance just the way it is. Like I said, testimonies are not a competition. They are something that we use to glorify God. There's something that people get to know you by, and there's something people get to know Jesus by. And what we're told to do in Just Walk Across the Room is to tell your story well. We're challenged to be able to tell our story well. And while I think that in some way means write it down and remember it and know it off by heart, I also think that that's not only what being able to tell your story well means. I think being able to tell your story well means that you could get a sentence into your testimony and that's all you need to say, because someone might jump in and start talking. Maybe the first sentence of your testimony is, you know what, I went to church one day. That's all you need to say, and someone says, oh, I went to church as well, and this is what happened. Telling your story well is being able to step back in that situation and listen. Listening to what they have to say about their journey. Learning to tell your story well is not being so caught up in the fact that it takes you 5 minutes and 37 seconds to go through your testimony and they have to be quiet for that time. And then once you've finished, they can ask questions. Being able to tell your story well is to stop, step back and let them go, which for most of us, we don't like talking more than we have to anyway. So that should be like a pretty easy tick in when it comes to telling our story well. Learning to tell your story well also means being okay with no response. It means you use that 5 minutes and 37 seconds and the person you're sharing with says absolutely nothing. They sort of look at you blankly. Anyone who's been in that situation will know that that's quite awkward and uncomfortable. But that's okay. The key is to not then overindulge and try and beef up your story to make it sound better so then maybe you get a response. Telling your story well is to trust that God will use that story. And maybe by you sharing, there's no response, but that person says, you know what, I know three other Christians and I'm going to go ask them what their story is. And maybe their story is the one that garners a response. And finally, it's to do it humbly, lovingly, and carefully. When you share your story, it's not about who has the best thing, who can sell it the best, who can talk it up the best. It's simply to share your story of how you were fallen and you received grace from an almighty Savior at no cost, and that changed your life. Now, when it comes to sharing story, the other thing is we don't actually have a choice. We're not given this option of, oh, maybe I will share my testimony. Maybe I will tell people that I follow Jesus. We're not actually sort of put in that position where we get to pick and choose. We're told to. But as people who love stories, we have the best story. We have the greatest redemption story in our own life to share. The story of a fallen person who was redeemed from a God who loved us more than we can possibly imagine. That's a great story to tell and a great story to share that we have a relationship with the King of the universe. And on that, God has a story. So we have a story and we need to learn to tell our story well. But God also has a story. And as we read this passage in Luke, we see the story of the sons, the younger son and the older son, and we see there's lives there. But the father also has a story. And the father is key because without the father's response to the son, the younger son, he was just a kid coming back home hoping his dad wouldn't be too mad at him. Without the loving father choosing to run out and meet his son, we just have the story of a son making his way back home. Now, I don't know many cultures now or any time in history where if you said to your dad, hey, dad, I'd like my inheritance now, so that sort of means you're dead. I'd like that money that I get when you die. I'm going to go spend it on what I fancy. I'm going to realize that was a bad move. I'm going to come home and I'm going to ask you to maybe give me a job. I don't know many cultures in history where that story ends with, yeah, sure, come on in, here's a job. I don't have a son, but I'm sure if I had a son and he came home and did that to me, I don't think I would be saying, yep, come on in, here's a job for you, let's get going. The magnitude of this story only makes sense by understanding that the father plays the key role. He doesn't even acknowledge the fact that the son went off and did dumb stuff. He didn't say, well, you better beg and grovel, you better do this and that. He simply runs out, welcomes him, embraces him, and invites him in to celebrate his decision to come back. And even with the other son, the father goes out to meet the second son. Without the father, there is just a son who is angry at his kid brother because he was a bit of a punk. Without the father, it's a story of a guy who is bitter because he doesn't think his brother deserves to be welcomed home. What the father points out is that the son is doing all this stuff, which is great. But if he's doing it out of duty and fear and because he thinks he has to do it or else, then he's missed the point. The point isn't to go out and spend all this time doing these things for the Father so the Father will be happy and pleased and impressed. The point is doing that hard labor because you love the Father. But if that comes at the price of missing your brother coming home, then you've missed the point of doing the hard work in the first place. See, without the Father to point these things out to the oldest son, all we have is a guy who is mad that his brother's home and is reunited with him. And as we look at these two and as we look at the father in this story, the question of which one alienated themselves from the father. As we look at God's story, we ask ourselves, these two sons, which one alienated themselves? And the answer is both of them did. Both of them alienated themselves from the father. But only one realized it. One son bailed on the father to go squander the wealth. But he came back. He came back realizing what he had done. And the father forgave him and accepted him back home. The other one was so concerned about keeping the rules that the father had told him about that he forgot about why the rules were there. He was so concerned about keeping the rules and making sure things were done, he missed his brother coming home and he missed the opportunity to celebrate with him. He alienated himself from the father. And the uncomfortable thing about this story, this parable, is it doesn't end with an answer for us. See, the first son, we get a response. He has come back and he has been accepted back into the family. But the older son, we don't get a conclusion for that story. We don't get told what he does, what his decision is. We just get told that the father lets him know that you were always with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found. And that's uncomfortable because we sort of want to get the answer there so we know what we have to do. What did the older son do? Because we'll just go do the same thing. I don't know about you, but the story of that older brother resonates with me more. I feel like I am the older brother more than I am the younger brother. I really like the story of the younger brother, and I can understand that story. But I question myself as the older brother. If someone came into this church, would I welcome them in as much as I say I would, no matter who they are, no matter their background, no matter where they come from, no matter how they dress, no matter what they look like? As much as I say I would welcome them in, would I? Or when they sat down somewhere that I normally sit, would I kind of go, oh, that's where I sit. You've sort of started off on the wrong foot here, buddy. When someone lets me know that there's a young guy who wants to come to youth group for the first time, but I know he's a bit of a troublemaker, and they give me the parents' mobile number, and I sort of go, well, I could ring them and invite them, or I could keep our youth group safe, because my thought is by inviting another kid in, our youth group will become unsafe. See, the older brother is much easier for us to be because we can hide behind the rules and say we didn't understand. This is the way it should be. You should work hard every day for your dad, and at the end of the day, get your reward. This is how it should be. You should look and act and fit in a certain mold, and then you can come hang out at this church. We don't like to say that, but that creeps in from time to time in my life, and maybe it creeps into yours. I'm going to invite John up to share a couple of stories now, because John has lived a fantastically awesome life. And on Friday, he shared a couple of stories with me and a couple of us at morning tea, and I think they're worth hearing. and worth being shared.
Thank you. I'm going to share with you a couple of stories that are very, very different in their endings. I hope you appreciate them. I hope you enjoy them. First one's about a guy called Ross Smith. In his bikie gang, he was known as Rocky. He was about 100, 150 millimetres taller than me, another pickaxe handle wider. He was a big lad. He was belonged to a bikie gang in Christchurch, New Zealand, which was my home city, called the Epitaph Riders. They were the most feared gang in the city. They were into everything in drugs, drug dealing and crime, up to their necks. And one Friday night, I'd gone with a group of other guys down to our city to share the gospel with people just randomly. And I saw this group of bikies sitting there, and I thought, oh, we were having a movie at our coffee house, but it was connected to our church. I thought, I'll go and ask them. I'd been in a gang myself before I came to Christ. I wasn't going to lose anything by asking them. Well, they could sort me out sort of thing, but they didn't appreciate it. But I was surprised they all said yes. Now, where is this place? And I tried to explain it to them, and one of the guys said to me, look, just jump on the back of my bike and lead us there. And it happened to be this guy, Ross Smith. I took them there. I thought there was a good chance they were going to wreck the place and break it up as they left, but they didn't. They stayed, they watched the movie, they sat and chatted for a while, and then all the other guys left, and I was left sitting with Ross. And I said, well, aren't you going to head off with your mates? He said, no, I want to talk to you. He said, I notice you've got tattoos. Where did you get those? He said, I know you weren't born with them. He said, there's a story there. And I said, well, I'll tell you my story. So I did. And he kept on hanging around. Then he said, what time do you have church Sunday night? And I told him, and he said, I'll come and pick you up. Now, coming to pick you up meant not in his car, on his Harley, in his full regalia with his gang patch, with his German helmet. And I was in Bible college, and Bible college rules said that I had to wear a suit, a collar and tie to every meeting on the Sunday. And here's this lad rolls up with his pants half-mast, as you can imagine, and all his patch and all his glory, and he pulls up on his bike and says, jump on the back. I'm in my suit, my collar and tie, nice big Bible, you're a Bible college student, remember, under my arm, and our church was about 100 metres from the middle of the city. So we had to ride right through the heart of the city to get to the church. And I'm sitting on the back feeling like an absolute fool. I'm looking at him, the back of his helmet, thinking, how must he feel with this idiot sitting behind him in a suit, collar and tie, with a big Bible under his arm, and here's a guy who's one of the worst city's worst bikers. We went to the church of about 600 people. He was the only one of all the guys in the church not wearing a suit. Can you imagine how he felt? Fish out of water, maybe? What do you reckon? He walks in there, we sit down on the seats. I was just actually sitting there before looking at the seats and thinking I had to have a smile because these seats had the back cut out of them. Now you can see where I'm going with my story, can't you? And he sits down next to me. Next thing I get a tap on the shoulder. Excuse me, can you ask your friend to pull his pants up? I said, no. No, he's fine. He's my friend. I've invited him here tonight. Just hang your cardigan on the back of the seat if it offends you. And if you can't do that, maybe just sit in another seat. But I want to see this guy come to know the Lord. Well, we resolved that one. But over the next few weeks, Sunday night after Sunday night after Sunday night, Ross would come and pick me up. And I noticed after a couple of weeks, he stopped wearing his patch. Still wore his helmet, still wore everything else. And I'm still wearing my suit and collar and tie and carrying my big Bible. And I realized that I had to do something for this guy to feel more comfortable. I was amazed that he persisted in what he was doing. He obviously was hungry. So I went to my pastor who ran the Bible college and I said, look, these are the rules, but this is the situation. I'm asking you to allow me not to wear a suit. So I can just wear jeans and just a whatever jumper that he feels more comfortable with me on the back of his bike, because I believe he's very, very close to the kingdom, and I believe that he will come right through. But he needs me to do something for him. And I was very grateful. My pastor said, no, that's fine, because he thought the whole Bible school might revolt amongst the guys seeing I got an exemption. It wasn't too long before Ross became a Christian. You know, I watched that young man grow in the grace and in the knowledge of the Lord. There was tremendous bushfires years ago in Melbourne in a place called Cockatoo. And Ross came round to my house and he said to me, I've been praying regarding the bushfires in Cockatoo. And I said, so have I. And I said, we both spent some time together in prayer. And by the time he finished, he said, I'm going to Cockatoo in Australia. He said, I'm going to go there. I'll build houses by day and I'll preach at night. That's what he did. He started a church, became a pastor. He got the training that he needed, became a pastor. He started a group that reached out to bikers and formed a group that became like Christian bikers. There was certainly a change. They just didn't still behave like Christians and talk like Christians. They really were Christians. But, you know, I had to cross the line somewhere. Across the room, so to speak. I had to do something to prove to him that I really genuinely cared about him. And God brought the increase. God gave such tremendous changes in that young guy's life. I was saying to BT before the service, you know, within weeks of him becoming a Christian, he went back to his club. He told them that he had become a Christian. He could no longer be a member. Now, criminal gang syndicates, which it was, don't really appreciate anyone leaving their ranks because they know everything. So what do? The next night, about half a dozen arrive with baseball bats at his house, at his mum's house, smashed up both houses, smashed up his car, smashed up his bike, smashed him up, and left a death threat there that if he ever said anything about their, as they call it, their interests, that he would be dead. He used to keep going back to their club gates, sharing with guys in that club till he left and came to Australia. That's the first story. The second story I want to tell you is totally different. My wife and I, my wife Jenny and I, we had been involved with quite a lot of young hippies who had come to know Christ and just helping them in the early days of their faith. And one of the couples that we were helping talked to us one night, and we were just talking about love, acceptance, and forgiveness. And they said to us about one of their friends who had gone along to a church with them for about 9 months, really, really hungry to know the Lord. And every time this friend went there, a lady from the church took it upon herself not to say hello, not to say how are you, not to say welcome, or not to say, my name's so-and-so, what's yours? But she would just go up to him and say these simple words. When are you going to get your hair cut? And long hair on a man is a shame. A quote from 1 Corinthians 11:14. And every week, this young guy would keep coming back to the church as hungry as ever. And every week, this same lady came up, no hello, nothing else, just those same words for 9 months. Finally, the Lord got a hold of him, transformed his life. He really came to a wonderful relationship with Jesus. And over a period of time, as he grew in grace and in the knowledge of the Lord, he realized he didn't have to have a hippie identity anymore. So he got his hair cut off. He went to church on the Sunday, and you know what happened? A lady came up to him and said to him, it's about time. And she never spoke to him again. Even though he remained in that church for years, she never, ever spoke to him again. Now, I'm going to give this back to BT and let him do what he wants to do with those stories. But thank you for letting me share them.
Thanks, John. Now,
In those two stories, we see two totally different pictures. We see a guy who is prepared to walk across the room and take a punt and look foolish. And we see someone who knew what the rules were and only cared about that. As we think of our own stories, as we think of what it means to share our story, as we think about what it means to tell our story well, we might have to own some of those times in our life. But as we think of God's story and we learn to tell God's story well, which one of those two was telling God's story well? Was it the first one of a guy who walked across and spoke to a guy and was probably quite scared to do so, and it was probably quite uncomfortable and nerve-wracking, but he did it? Or is the story that God was telling the one where the lady simply said, "Cut your hair," and then when it was cut, said, "Good"? To tell God's story well isn't just to know it with our head, isn't to be able to say, right, we need to go to Luke 15 and let's read 11 verses 11 to 31. Now I'm going to tell you God's story, some of God's story. We can tell our own story well through our own life. We can share our story well. We know the ups and downs in our lives. But to share God's story well, it means to not only have the head knowledge of the Bible, it means to have the heart actions to take a chance and walk across the room. To share God's story well, it means to be uncomfortable. It means to maybe understand that the rules are there for a good reason, but sometimes, in the sake of a salvation, you can chat to someone and find out why that's there. I'm sure that the lady had a good reason for thinking that that hair should be cut. And imagine if she hadn't have ended the conversation with, "Good, you cut your hair." Imagine if she had have engaged and that guy got to find out why it was such a big deal that he cut his hair. Maybe he got to find out something really quite traumatic in her life, or something that made sense of why she was like she was. And maybe through that, God's story was going to be told well. Unfortunately, all she said was "good" and left. It's easy to blame her and say, "Well, what a terrible lady, what a wicked lady." But how many times have we done that in this exact church? How many times have we looked at someone and maybe gone, "Oh, it's a bit uncomfortable to chat to them." Or, "No, the rules say this, and they haven't done that, so that's not fair." As we learn to tell God's story well, it is important that we know the story of the gospel. But it is also important that we're living it out. We're not just telling people what it is. And as we partake in communion together this afternoon, it's an opportunity for us to reflect on those things in our life. Maybe it's an opportunity to think of what our weeks looked like and maybe think of those times where we didn't tell God's story so well. Maybe it's a time to be thankful for the greatest story ever told. Story of Jesus. A man who lived a sinless life, a man who ate with sinners, tax collectors, and prostitutes, all while being shunned by the people who knew him scripturally the best. He answered everything of the critics threw at him, and he did that with love and humility. And though he did all of this, he was still shunned and he was still sent to die on the cross. It was only Jesus who could take the sin of the world on his shoulders. Jesus, fully man, fully God. Choosing to come to earth to accept his role and to play that out. He went to the cross along with sin and he died. Anyone who's seen the Passion knows that even that in itself is a pretty powerful story. But again, if it just ended there, then it's just a cool story. Jesus didn't stay dead. He defeated death, and with it defeated the power of sin. And with that, holds out his hand to say, hey, you can be part of this redemption story in your life. Sin can not have a hold of you if you accept me. Maybe today you came in feeling like John. Maybe you came in with the great story of the risk you took to walk across the room. Maybe today you come in feeling like the old lady who just wanted to make sure that the hair was cut. As we partake in communion together, do we want to alienate the Father from our story? Or do we want to invite him in? We're going to do communion a little bit differently this afternoon. I'll ask the helpers to come forward, and they will simply hold the emblems at the front, and I'll ask you to come forward and take the emblems. If something you would like to do is share the power of your story, can I encourage you to, as you walk back, maybe grab someone and walk to the back of the room and share some things that you would like to talk about. If you're feeling like that old lady, can I encourage you, grab someone and chat to them and say, hey, I need to talk about you about this before I partake in communion, because this is important. If you want to get to know Jesus a little bit more, as you partake in communion, it's a feast that we share together to celebrate the death and the victory over death that Jesus had. Now, if you don't believe in that, it's a strange thing to partake in. But if you'd like to know a little bit more about that, can I encourage you, as you come forward and maybe grab the emblems, speak to someone about why you're taking them today. Because we want to be a church that learns to tell not only our own stories well, but we want to be able to tell God's story well. And maybe that comes today by just sharing with one another. If you don't mind, I'll pray and I'll ask the helpers to come forward. And just as there's some music being played, if you'd like to come forward and grab emblems. Father God, thank you for this afternoon. Thank you for our church. Thank you for the stories that we got to hear. Thank you for John and his willingness to share. And Father, as we look to you, as we look to your story, and we want to be people who tell it well, may we be bold to know that it is your love that should shine through. Not rules and regulations, but your love. Father, as we gather around the table to partake in communion and remember the victory that you had over sin, we ask that we might be bold in sharing with the people around us, if that is something you are laying in our heart. Father, we thank you for Jesus. We thank you for the cross. We thank you for the empty tomb. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.